නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. As you all can remember, we started a new series which is called Purabheda Sutta, available in the Sutta Nipata. And as we discussed last time, this sutta was uttered by the Buddha when there was a huge conglomeration of Devas and the Brahmas. And during that conglomeration, there are many large gathering of Devas, Brahmas, and some of them had the kind of an idea what we need to do before the breaking off of the body, before our death, what we need to do. So this is the kind of a doubt which has arisen in those their mind, and Buddha knew that, and once the right time is there, Buddha created another Buddha, kind of a mind created Buddha, with his about 700 mind made monks. Now they are also there, and now that mind created Buddha is asking questions and Buddha is answering. Now this is actually a common thing happened to several other suttas, like Kalahavivada Sutta, Chula Vyuha Sutta, Mahavyuha Sutta, Tuvataka Sutta, and then Samma Paribhajaniya Sutta, Attadanda Sutta. So these are several other suttas. The same scenario has happened where the mind created Buddha asking questions and the Buddha answering them. The speciality in this Purabheda Sutta is that the Buddha is not alone, that mind created Buddha is with 700 monks. So this is how the commentary explains it. So the question asked by the mind created Buddha is Katan Dassi Katan Sido Upasantoti Vuchati Tamme Gotama Pabruhi Puchito Uttamang Narang Katan dasi katan silo. So how one has to see in the sense what would be the right view one has to have, and then katan silo, what kind of behavior, the sila, the morality what one has to have. Upasantoti uchati, for that so that we can say that he is a peaceful person, he is said to be a muni, a sage. Tamme Gotama Pabruhi Puchito Uttamangna. So that that supreme person, could you explain to us? So this is the question asked by the mind created Buddha. Now the Buddha is answering, and basically this sutta comprises of very subtle, very beautiful human qualities. And as we progress in our practice, probably we may be able to recognize whether they are available within our mind, because they are very much like endowed in the human mind, but unfortunately because of various other defilements, so they are very much like covered. And if they are not enough available, then you can try to develop them, that's also there. And on the other hand, when we hear certain kinds of qualities, we probably might able to see the opposites. And if those opposites are there, then we need to abandon that. Instead, we need to see what Buddha recommends to have within the human mind. So we have already discussed a couple of them. Vita Tanho Pura Abhedo, so this is the theme of the whole sutta. So one has to abandon craving before the death. So before the body is breaking up, you need to abandon the craving, because craving is the cause of suffering. In case you are continuing with it, so it definitely will have another birth, another death, another birth, another death, a continuous wandering in the samsara. But on the other hand, if we are able to abandon the cause of suffering, that's the craving, then this would be the final death. Vemajje upasankhyo Pubbamanta Anishito. Now these are probably familiar to us as meditators. So how to abandon the past and to abandon the future preferences. Tassanatti Purakkhatam. So the preferences are not there, so the mind is very much like open, ready to accept in a more radical way. That means there are no preferences. So typically we have various preferences. This should be like this, he should behave like this, my children should behave like this. So like this, various preferences are there. Our futuristic frames are there. But unfortunately, the incidents might not happen as the way we want. Ultimately, what happens is we get frustrated, we get unhappy, we become sort of subject to some sort of a mental unrest. But if we are open, if we are able to maintain our attitude in an open way, we are ready to accept whatever happens. I am ready to accept the way it is. I am ready to cope up with the situation. Then we are not suffering because we are ready. And then last time we discussed a few more qualities. Akkodhano, where one is free from anger. Asantasi, free from any fear. So mind is not fearful. Typically fear comes, as we discussed, because when there is a person here to protect, there is I here to protect, and you might harm me, so I am afraid. Someone might harm me, so I am afraid. So I am here and another person is there, so there is a conflict, so I am in trouble, so I am get afraid. So this is the typical way that we look at. But the more we develop the practice, so we might have to look at the things in an impersonal way. Things are happening due to a dependently arising recent process as a result of Patisamuppada, the Dappacheta principle. Things are happening due to such a causal way. Other than that, there is no person here, a being here, myself here. So likewise, a deeper insight may be helpful to abandon that fear. But otherwise what happens, we always have someone to protect, and so that is always giving some sort of a burden to the mind, a little bit of fearful uncertainty to the mind, because I am here, I am in a little bit of a trouble, and I might be sort of killed, or I might be harmed. So likewise we have such kind of an idea, because there is a person here, there is an I here to protect. So that is one thing that mentioned here, asantasi. So the one who is free from fear. Avikatti. So that means the one is not boastful. Even though one may have certain good qualities, still one maintain them without boasting about them. So maintaining a very kind of an innocent, very humble way of life, not showing up. Akukkucho, that means there is no any regrets. One is maintaining good sila, the morality, and one's conduct is pretty good. So there is no much things to worry about. And mantabhani, so those are the reflection with, and after reflecting on, only one is speaking. So there is advice given by the Buddha to Venerable Rahula, telling Pachavekitva, pachavekitva, kayena kammang khatabbang. Pachavekitva, pachavekitva, vachaya kammang khatabbang. Pachavekitva, pachavekitva, manasaya kammang khatabbang. So before you conduct a bodily deed, you need to reflect about it. Before you speak out, you need to reflect about it. Before you think, you need to reflect about it. So this is a kind of a training that Buddha is giving to Venerable Rahula, young Rahula, before he become enlightened. So these are the advices given to Venerable Rahula. So the reflection might be becoming more and more subtle and ongoing, and with kind of an effortless way it might happen as one is progressing. And this is another quality Buddha is asking to develop. And the other one is anuddhato. There is no any proud or any kind of a conceit. sorry, anuddhata is not restless. Uddhata is the restlessness, and the anuddhata is not restless. So one's mind is fairly calm, tranquil, without getting agitated. Save vachayato muni, and he is truly a muni controlled in speech. Now this we already discussed, and now we can get into the next verse. Last week actually we have discussed that far, and we'll start the next verse. Nirasatti anagati atitam nanu sochati vivekadassi passesu dittisu cha na niyati. Nirasatti anagati, there is no asa, there is no any attachment, any inclination, there is any a huge kind of planning towards the future. Atitam nanu sochati, does not sorrow over the past. Vivekadassi passesu, is a seer of seclusion in the midst of context. Ditti sucha na niyati, and there is no any wrong views that one is trying to go through. Now, nirasatti anagati, so as we already discussed to some extent, not having preferences already indicates this. So one is typically, we have various plans, various views, various desires projected towards the future. That is quite common. And having various desires, hopes, wishes projected towards the future. But unfortunately, the future is uncertain. It can bring certain kind of uncertainty to the mind, a restlessness to the mind, agitation to the mind. Because we are not 100% sure the way we want, the way we plan, the way we like would happen the same way as we wish. So there is no any such kind of an agreement. So always there is an uncertainty when there are hopes or plans we have. Now typically our minds likes to engage with such planning, continuously projecting. So those are typically happening within the mind. So there is always a futuristic inclination in the mind. So bhava tanha has a great impact in this behavior to the mind. So the bhava tanha particularly means some sort of a continuation. You want to continue, I want to live forever. Assume that you are now sick and you automatically wish for the health. Currently you are poor, you automatically have a wish to become rich. Currently you are at a lower position in your maybe in your occupation or profession, and you want to have a promotion. So every time, so our mind is inclined towards the future and might even lead to thinking, proliferation, obsessive thinking, leading towards kind of a dreaming, even daydreaming, fantasizing. All these things are there because we have such a inclination in the mind towards the future. Bhava tanha, expecting some sort of an existence, some sort of a continuation, maybe a kind of a progress. Now in a way, this is why, I mean, we are being driving. Actually, in order for us to drive forward, so these sort of inclined desires are very useful in a way. But you are not happy right now. You are not 100% fulfilled right now. Instead, you feel, I am still not happy. I am little restless. I am little unhappy. So if I get that, I'll be happy. If I be with him, I'll be happy. If I be with her, I'll be happy. If the situation would change like this, I will be happy. So this is a kind of a vicious cycle that we might continue, because always there are such kind of futuristic ideas, inclinations, projected views that we may try to entertain, and ultimately we get frustrated. But the muni, the sage, is free from such futuristic inclinations, nirasatti anagati. So he is without attachment to the future. So he is with a kind of an open mind, with a radical acceptance.
Atitang nanu sochati.
And he does not sorrow over the past. Now, regretting about the past, what I couldn't do during the past, or what I did in the past. Suppose that you want to do some very good things in the past, but you couldn't do it. Due to some reason, you couldn't do it, you missed it, you left it, you forgot it, you couldn't do it. Now you are regretting about what has happened. Or else there may be something bad that you had to do and you have done that. And you are regretting about that bad, unlawful activity what you have done. So likewise, the regret can happen in different ways. So when it happens again and again, that past incident comes to the mind and you start thinking about it, worrying about it, ruminating about it. So these kinds of mental frustrations can happen when we are regretting about the past. But the Muni, on the other hand, atitang nanu sochati, he is not regretting about the past, he is not sorrowful about the past. Past has gone. He tried to emphasize the present, live in the present, keeping the mind open and refreshed, because it is not conditioned. So more as we continue the practice, the mind has to be more unconditioned and mind has to be free, open, always ready to accept what's happening. And you are ready to adjust to yourself. It is not that you are kind of hindered or conditioned by some sort of a fixation. Rather, the mind has to be a very soft, gentle kind of an attitude where you are able to adjust to yourself, like water. Once the water is poured into a particular vessel, it can easily take its a shape. So likewise, you are able to adjust to yourself, quite adaptable. So these kinds of qualities are very rare. By the way, these are the ones that we need to sort of look at, whether these things are at least available in my mind to some extent. As I am practicing, as I am progressing, are these qualities are inculcated in the mind? Vivekadasi passesu. Now this is a very interesting part. Vivekadasi passesu. So the contacts are very much like happening without much of your interaction. So you are able to maintain a serene mind even though I see the sights. You are still able to maintain a serene mind even though your ear hears the sound. You are able to maintain a serene mind even though your tongue is touching various tastes, body is going through various tangibles, nose is going through various odors. Still the mind is very much like maintaining its seclusion, it's maintaining its purity, unattached nature. And time to time there may be thoughts, ideas come into the mind, but that also unable to disturb the mind, pierce the mind. Still the mind maintains its clarity, stability, purity. Now, vivekadasi passesu. Now this is very, therefore, a kind of a state where all the contacts are happening, but mind does not get involved with them. Mind does not get disturbed by those contacts. I saw the others, the sights also can happen. Ear is there, so the sounds also can happen. Smells, tastes, tangibles, thoughts, all can happen, but mind's clarity is intact. Calmness is preserved, something like that. Now, this is not possible just through mere concentration. To some extent, once you are able to maintain some deep concentration effortfully, you may be able to maintain such a mind because of the strength of the concentration. But as Vipassana point of view, we can see that the answer or the advice given to Venerable Bahia, Ditte Dittamattam Bhavissati. Sute sutamattam bhavissati, mute mutamattam bhavissati, vinyate vinyatamattam bhavissati. So Buddha simply says to Bahia, so once you see, keep it merely to the seeing. Once you hear, keep it merely to hearing. Once you smell, taste, touch, keep it only to that. And when there are thoughts coming, keep it merely to that. Don't get involved, don't get participate. Just maintain that clarity, maintain your seclusion. Don't initiate any proliferation. So as much as possible, mind is resting, mind is calm, maintaining kind of a well-being, an evenness of the mind is there. Now, this is possible only to that level through Vipassana. You need practice again and again, maybe Satipatthana practice, and as a result of the Satipatthana practice, you are in sort of encountering a situation. Even though sights are there, mind doesn't want to get involved. Even though sounds are there, mind doesn't want to get involved. Taste, tangibles, etc. are there, but mind can maintain its seclusion, doesn't want to get involved. It is unwavering type of a mind. And further, this we can see, so what are the causes for such behavior of the mind? Because mind has understood the true nature of those sights, sounds, smells, tastes, tangibles and thoughts. It has seen the true nature. And as a result of that, the mind has withdrawn from participation. Doesn't want to get participate because it's a aberration. If the mind get participated, it's a kind of an aberration, kind of a friction. It's a heaviness, a burden. How about maintaining the seclusion? How about maintaining the clarity? Now, further, we can look at how we get triggered due to these various sense contact. So we can look at it from a different angle. So I have taken one part from the Kalakarama Sutta. So how an arahant would behave with respect to the sights. Datta dattabbang dittang na manyati. He does not conceive of a visible thing as apart from sight. Datta dattabbang dittang na manyati. Now typically what happens when we see something, it is something for us. It is some important thing for us. It is an object for us. It may be someone for us. Say for example, you are looking at the rod and there may be a car, a beautiful car. That beautiful car may be better than my car. Who owns that car? I better talk to that person. I better look for this type of a car. So now I am thinking. So there is a car and I start comparing it with my car. And now I am conceiving, now I am proliferating. Now I want to buy that car. Likewise, so whenever we typically look at the world through our eyes, what we encounter are objects. We encounter things, we encounter people, persons, individuals. So that promotes thinking, by the way. When we simply see things, those things actually promote thinking, conceiving. On the other hand, in order to conceive, we need things, or we need concepts, or we need objects, or we need people or persons, individuals. Without them, we can't think. So thinking is highly dependent on these concepts. A man, a woman, a bus, a car, a lorry, all these are concepts. Actually, once we gather various little parts, assemble them in a particular order, we are giving various names for wheels and maybe several axles, various other parts, maybe an engine, a steering wheel, seats, etc. gathered in a particular style, then we call it a car. And if we make it little larger and with six wheels, probably we can call it a bus. So likewise, so once we gather things together, we give it a name for easy communication. so that we can distinctly recognize that object from others. So therefore, we are quite skillful in naming objects. We are labeling objects. Every time when different things are there, we label them so that we can communicate, we can explain, we can distinctly recognize. So we introduce various labels, various names. But ultimately what happens, we start recognizing objects representing those labels. That object becomes a reality. We forget that it is an assembled kind of an object. It's a combination of so many little parts. We forget that. We simply being driven by that outer appearance, taking that as one unit. So this gana sanya, the compactness, is therefore initiating thinking, and therefore what happens is, other than mere seeing, for us there is something when we see. There is an object when we see. There is a car when we see. There is mother when we see. There is father when we see. So likewise, we encounter people, objects when we see. But for the Arahants, Buddha say, they only see, but there is no object as such. They may be able to recognize from the conventional point of view, but still mind remains calm, quiet, without getting tangled. So as explained already to the Bahia, the same thing here does not conceive of a visible thing as apart from sight. Seeing happens, but mind remains calm, uninvolved, undisturbed, because thinking typically based on concepts. Now the thinking doesn't want to initiate, conceiving does not happen. Mind remains calm, quiet. So this is one scenario. And further, Buddha explains in Kalakarama Sutta, he does not conceive of an unseen. Now, the other side of the story is that we can conceive taking unseen. I couldn't see it. So you still may be worrying that you couldn't see it, or you are sort of happy that you couldn't see it. Either way, you are thinking because you didn't see. So not seeing also a cause for proliferation, conceiving. Third part is, he does not conceive of a thing worth seeing. So there are certain objects that we think, okay, I should see it. It's very important to see it. There is a beautiful place that you should visit and see it, enjoy it. There's a really wonderful cinema, a film, you should see it. So likewise, we encourage this seeing. We think that the certain sites are very, very important to see. I should see it before die. I should visit there. I should go there. I need to see it. So it's very, very important to see it. So likewise, we add value to certain sites. And by adding such value and thinking that it should be seen, we start thinking about it. We start proliferating about it, we start imagining about it, how it would like. So I am starting imagining it even though I didn't see it. Because I consider it is something to see, something important to see. So this is also another area that the conceiving can happen, the proliferation can happen. The last one is the real interesting one. He does not conceive about a seer. So typically, I am here and you are there, I see you. I am here, there may be an object outside, I see that object. Say, I am here, the car is in the garage and now I am walking towards the garage. I see my car. I am here. I am the one seeing it. I am the owner. This is my car. So there is always a person behind the whole picture. Always promoting a person. So we start thinking, while having this preconceived idea that there is a person here, there is an individual here, there is I am here. So when that kind of erroneous misconception is there, so we start conceiving. you start proliferating, you start overthinking, because there is someone here. So all the experience we explain with respect to that experiencer, there is a person who is experiencing. But here Buddha denies this whole thing and he simply says, other than mere seeing, there is no person who is seeing. There is no seer in this whole scenario, in this whole incident. So this is actually very deep and very interesting to understand. So when we see something, is there any sense of I arising within the mind? Is there any self-view arising in the mind? Or are we merely maintaining the mind in a very soft, gentle, relaxed way, even without thoughts, even though the seeing, the activity is happening? So same thing is common to the other factors, like for example what you call hearing, smelling, tasting, touching and thinking. So typically when we hear something, we hear a song. That song is very beautiful. Who is the singer? So now I start thinking about it. I start enjoying it. So likewise, so we hear something. We hear a song. We hear a sound. We hear someone is blaming. We hear someone's speech. So always going beyond the mere hearing, we recognize as something. But is it possible to stop at mere hearing without making something? So as we progress in our practice, so the mind, even though we are hearing various sounds, now we are not objectifying them. We are not identifying them as some sort of someone talking. Rather, mere sound is there, mere hearing is there. So mind maintains its clarity, maintains its stability, and continues to maintain its, say, freedom, not getting involved. Similarly, it doesn't conceive thinking that I didn't hear it. Similarly, it didn't conceive thinking that I should hear it. And similarly, he is not conceiving thinking that I am the one hearing it, I am the one listening it. So there is I who is listening, there is a listener. But there is no listener for the arahants. So from our side, there is no person who is listening, there is no listener. Even though listening is there, even though hearing is there is no listener. So similarly, the nose, tongue, body also operates. There are smells, tastes, tangibles, but we are not objectifying them. Similarly, not conceiving thinking that I didn't experience it, and we should not consider it should be experienced, or should not consider that there is a person who is experiencing. There is no such experiencer. The last part is the other interesting part, where thoughts are there. They are merely thoughts. We are not being caught by those thoughts. So thoughts are coming and going, but the mind remained intact, mind remained calm, tranquil, without getting involved, even though thoughts are coming and going. So they are mere thoughts. And you are not conceiving thinking that I couldn't think it. So sometimes we ask people, why didn't you think about it? You should have thought about it. So we emphasize thinking. So then you might answer, oh yes, I didn't think like that. I forgot to think like that. I forgot it altogether to think. So likewise, we are regretting that I couldn't think about it. So these regrets can happen because I couldn't take a proper action because I didn't think that like that. I didn't get the proper idea. So thinking that also we can proliferate. So for the arahants, that is also not there. And similarly, he is not emphasizing thinking, I should see, I should think. There is no such emphasis to thinking. And if we emphasize like that, again, we might tend to proliferate. And the last part is, there is no thinker. Even though thinking can happen, but there is no thinker. There can be thoughts without a thinker. Now this is very, very interesting. So if we are able to maintain such a way of operation in ourselves, in such a way of experience within ourselves, now we can say we are Viveka Dasi Passesu. So the contacts are still happening. I may get contact with the sights, ear with sounds, nose with smells, tongue with the taste, body with the tangibles, and the mind with the objects, but they are not really disturbing the mind. They are not really piercing the mind. The mind clarity is still maintaining, so you are maintaining some sort of a seclusion, kind of a distinction or separation from those contacts. So you are able to be free from contacts. Viveka dasi passesu. So typically what happens, because our senses are fully operative, so keep on we disturbed, and mind also get involved. The mind get triggered to think when those sense impingements are happening. But even though the sense impingements are happening, if your mind remains calm, quiet, without getting involved, so that is where we have to say, okay, now you see the seclusion in the midst of contacts. It is not that you are living in a vacuum. Rather, you are living in the typical world. Still sounds are happening, still sights are there, still smells, tastes, tangibles are there, still thoughts can happen. But you have the capacity to maintain a clear mind, uninvolved mind, calm mind, serene mind. So this is the kind of a target in a way. So are we able to maintain such secluded mind amidst all the contacts? So the arahant says like that. So he is maintaining a clear, calm, quiet, purified state of mind amidst contacts. Viveka dasi passesu. Ditti suchanna niyati. He is not led astray among views. Now here actually the views are explained with respect to the 62 wrong views. So typically the meditators can get into various different views, but the proper view, the correct view, the sammaditti, what Buddha recommends, ultimately helps to free the mind altogether without any kind of a adherence, without any kind of a strong holding, without any kind of a conditioning. Typically, once we adhere to a particular view, we strongly want to protect it, we want to adhere to it, we want to guard it. We don't like to get it challenged because we are strongly adhering to a particular view. So that is the typical behavior with respect to the views. But the arahant, as a result of his fulfillment of the right view, so his mind is completely liberated. His mind is completely freed. So the right view that Buddha indicates has some speciality in that sense. So it's typically going against the nature of a view. The typical nature of a view is asking us, inviting us to grasp it, hold it, strongly adhere to it. But the different behavior in the Sammaditti is it's inviting us to release the mind, to free the mind, not encouraging any attachment, not encouraging any sort of a grasping. So it's inviting us to release the mind. So the mind is released as a result of the Sammaditti. So there is no any kind of a adherence or grasping to the views, and he therefore is not astray by various views. His mind or his behavior is not governed by various views. So these are very subtle qualities, in a way some deep qualities that Buddha is explaining in this Purabeda Sutta. And we can discuss the next verse maybe next week, and I will stop here. Now I like to open the session for questions.
So Bhante, there is no hands that has been raised from our side. Do you have anybody from your side?
Still they are not ready.
Yes, I see two hands. This has come up.
Okay.
So I'll give Nandana to ask for the first question. You can unmute Nandana.
Bhante, can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Thank you, Bishan. Bhante, I was kind of listening to what you explained today about these different ways of seeing things, you know, seeing things and not proliferating, and then not there being a seer, not there being a person who is seeing. All these kind of explanations, I was just thinking, recently you discussed about a state of mind that is called signless.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was just wondering, is what you explained today, is that something like the state of mind that you explained as signless?
Yes, definitely.
State of mind?
Yeah, so while you are in the signless state, you should have all these qualities, in a way, we can say. So you can check, while you are maintaining the signless state, are you objectifying when you see? Or you are going through a mere seeing? And similarly, while you are in the signless, are you worrying about what you haven't seen? While you are in the signless, are you still thinking about that something is worth of seeing? While you are in the signless, are you perceiving that there is a person who is seeing? Or you are going through the seeing? So,
right.
I mean,
yes.
So this is interesting. I mean, in a way, Buddha points out from different angles. So while you are in the signless, that emptiness, so you should have these very very subtle qualities sort of embodied to the mind. You are not objectifying things, and again you are not conceiving thinking that I haven't seen, not conceiving thinking that there is something to see, and again you are not conceiving thinking that I am the one seeing.
Right, so that's what I was thinking, because when you think about the signless state of mind, is when we have that, probably first of all we have that secluded state of mind,
mm-hmm.
like Viveka,
yeah,
and then we have the concentration, but not on a given or one object, but rather an expanded open concentration.
Mm-hmm.
And then we experience things. We experience physical through the physical organs as well as the mind, thoughts, but without proliferating,
mm-hmm.
Just experience them and let them go as they come and go. So that is a signless state. So this is actually what you explained today is probably is another way Buddha has explained how to experience or how to abide in the signless state of mind, I think, right?
Yeah. So basically, while you are there, so certain other way that the how we can look at it from the sense point of view. So even though the seeing is happening, so how your eye faculty is working, or how the mind is working to this interaction. So if you now typical behavior is when we see, immediately our mind objectify it, and I see my mother, I see my daughter, I see my son. So that is how we typically immediately objectify the sight, and then I start thinking. That objectifying actually promotes thinking. Or we can say always thinking is initiated based on an object, based on a concept.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. That is very clear.
Yeah.
I have another question actually about the Moggallana Samyutta that you discussed a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
So I have been, after listening to your talk, I read the Moggallana Samyutta in the Sinhala medium.
Mm-hmm.
So I had this thought that I wanted to clarify that from you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you explained the Venerable Moggallana was explaining to the Buddha about how he had those factors of the first jhana.
Mm-hmm.
For example, like vitakka vichara, ekagrata, and all those factors, right?
Yeah.
Piti, sukha, and ekagrata. So those five factors that he was explaining, and then he was saying that even with these factors, when I was abiding, I still had these slight proliferations.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the Moggallana Samyutta, in the Sinhalese, the English one I read, and the English word that is used, how Venerable Moggallana explains it, is by saying, while I was abiding, the word is abiding, with these, secluded, with a secluded mind and with concentration and all of that. And in the Sinhalese translation, the word that was used was vasayakara means sitinaka.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was just wondering, so I always thought the jhana, let's say if you take just the first jhana,
yeah,
I always thought the first jhana is a state of mind that we can only experience while we are in meditation, with eyes closed, and after practicing a lot of concentration and just being seated without moving and kind of being in a meditative, whatever you call it, paryanka or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
The meditation. But when I read this, I'm just wondering, is it possible for one to abide in the first jhana without actually being in a paryanka, or without being in a meditative posture, but in a, let's say, seated somewhere, outside, or in a not so busy place where you have had your good meditation for a few days? And is it possible for someone to keep someone's eyes open and just sit down and just be in the first jhana?
It depends on the practice, actually. Now, you can have that experience, particularly into the vipassana point of view. But the samatha meditation might require a fair amount of environmental support, because it might be difficult for such person to keep the eyes quite open and enter the first jhana, because there may be a tendency to get disturbed easily. But once you close your eyes, you feel secluded, you feel escape from the outside environment, and you are easily able to concentrate. But on the other hand, now say for example animitta, so that is kind of a skill that being developed as a result of the wisdom. So it doesn't matter either you close eyes or open your eyes, so the skill still remains. Probably it is difficult at the beginning, but slowly one may be able to understand, still mind does not take or pick signs, as we already discussed in this sutta. So, ditte dittamattang is possible. So, even though sights are there, mind doesn't want to get involved, mind maintains its clarity without picking the signs. But the first jhana, on the other hand, is a kind of a temporary suppression of the defilements, temporary suppression, that is also not based on the wisdom but based on the concentration.
Concentration.
So concentration is one factor to suppress the defilement. So that is the most influential factor in the jhana to suppress defilements. But that concentration weakens as you open your eyes. So that's why, say for example, you are in the paryanka, you are in the sitting meditation, and once you open your eyes, the whole session collapse. Whole session, you know, get disturbed, heavily disturbed. So as you said, therefore, it would be very difficult for someone to attain first jhana while eyes are open. Typically, one attains it while eyes are closed. But on the other hand, when your eyes are open, if the surrounding is mere, maybe completely covered, or mere a canvas, or maybe a curtain or something is there, not much disturbing, that also something one can try, because there is no distractions as such.
Okay. So are you saying, Bhante, that one cannot attain the first jhana while doing vipassana and being in a state of signless mind?
Uh-huh. Now, that's a different scenario actually. So there is the qualities of the first jhana vipassana also. That we discussed some time back. So from the vipassana point of view, so the jhana factors are still present when you do the vipassana practice. Say for example, you are practicing vedana anupassana, so you are applying your mind again and again to various feelings. So the applied mind is there, vitakka is there. And not only that, you start investigating the feelings, so the vichara is also there. And once this practice getting familiarized, now you feel happy, you feel confident, and there is a little bit of rapture rising. So the piti sukha is also there, and mind is concentrated again and again onto the new coming feeling. So the vitakka vichara piti sukha ekagata, the jhana factors are available even in the vipassana, but in a momentary level. So because this object is a passing object, it's a changing object. So you are applying your mind to a changing object and you start investigating it.
That is not clearly first jhana, right?
So, but the qualities are there, that's the thing. So that's why Venerable this Sayado Upandita argues, so there is first jhana even in the vipassana. There is second jhana even in the vipassana, third jhana, fourth jhana even in the vipassana. So you can't deny it, because a jhana is typically defined based on the jhana factors. So jhana factors are there. But the interesting thing is, you are not absorbed, by the way. You are not adhered to the object. Isn't it? So now so you now adhering to the object and, you know, get stuck in it is one scenario. Maintaining the jhana factors beautifully and maintaining them properly, maintaining that balance in the mind is another case. Actually, in the samatha point of view, jhana is where you get absorbed. Even though the factors are there, you get one with the object. That is why it is typically called absorption.
The only difference, as I can see, is that in the samatha practice, in the jhana, you, let's say for example, you attain the jhana through anapanasati.
Mm-hmm.
So your concentration arises out of your breath, in breath and out breath only.
We can't say only anapanasati. You can use various other techniques.
What I'm saying is, for example, if you take anapanasati,
mm-hmm.
if you practice anapanasati and attain the first jhana, then your concentration, first part,
mm-hmm.
the vitakka vichara part, that is only limited to the breath. Whereas in the vipassana situation, it is not one object, but it's rather
series of objects. By the way, even in the anapanasati, even when we are talking samatha meditation, samatha jhana, actually, if you want to attain deep samatha jhana, you can't simply do it from the anapanasati breath. But while you practice anapanasati, you need to get that sign, what we call the counterpart sign, nimitta, and then you need to slowly pay attention to that nimitta. That nimitta has to be a stable nimitta, very pleasant, stable, and you perceive it as a permanent nimitta. Now, very stable, permanent nimitta is there, and you are associating that, and you get absorbed to that. Not that you are absorbing to the breath.
Okay, thank you,
Bhante. Yeah. And another thing, actually, the first question that you ask about that, how we see things and etc. Actually, recently we completed a Sinhala retreat at Nisarnavane based on the Kalakarama Sutta. Probably you can listen to that also, because the whole topic is based on the Kalakarama Sutta. It's a very beautiful one and really worth listening.
Thank you, Bhante. Kalakarama.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Nandana. And next, I'll invite Erandi to ask your question.
Therwan Saranai, Hanwada.
Yes, yes. Okay, Anna.
Oh, Therwan Saranai, Saminhasa, Sarai. My question is actually about meditation. So I'm sorry, I tried to connect to the daily Kamathan sessions. The time was a bit inconvenient, so I decided to ask the question over here.
Yeah.
So it is actually about an experience, Swami Nohansa. So I started meditating like a couple of months ago. I started with Sakman Bhavanava.
Yeah.
And then I gradually started doing Paryanka after listening to sermons from you and, you know, the monks in Nisarnavanya. And after a couple of weeks, Swami Nohansa, I was able to experience the tremors and I think you call it like kampana, chanchala, all those feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think like when I was like focused on, let's say during walking meditation to the leg touching the floor, or in Paryanka, it was mostly about expansion and constriction of the breath, because I couldn't really focus on the location of the breath touching my nose or nostrils. So after a couple of weeks, like I said, I was able to feel the tremors and everything. And from that point onwards, I wasn't sure what to do. So my first question is, when that happens, what should be the next step? Should we focus on that, or should we consider that as a distraction and keep the attention on whatever the focus that we were doing at the time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then
one moment. Yeah.
After?
Yeah. We'll answer that first. So basically, as you practice breath meditation, so there's a possibility, as you said, the tremors to happen, various vibrations to happen, and probably you can station your attention there to this new object, new happening, new vibrations, and see how they are coming and going, and how they are changing, and how they are happening. And if in case you get distracted, in case your mind get sort of loosen your attention, lose your concentration, and you start again thinking. So that means still your mind is not ready to do that activity. So that is something that you need to check. So it is possible, yes, it is possible you can shift your attention and start observing various vibrations. But if it is getting distracted, then you better be with the breath for some more time. But on the other hand, once you shift your attention and start focusing on various vibrations, if you clearly see them properly, and that is a good sign that yes, you can continue that. And through that observation, actually the further faculties may start developing. Your faculties start sharpen. And so actually in that case, Anapanasati becomes a way to promote the mindfulness and concentration, but the real vipassana part happened during this investigation into the vibrations. So you are more into the elements meditation than into the breath meditation. But for certain other people, actually, these vibrations might not happen. So, but for you, if it is happening, there's an opening there for you to involve with some amount of vipassana practice.
Okay, understood, Swami Hansa.
Yeah.
So, I have like a further experience, if you don't mind, answer that.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I really wasn't sure what to do, but since it was like a new thing happening, my focus was obviously pointed towards that, and what I realized was they just happened, and they're there for like a couple of seconds maybe, and then they just disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And when I tried to kind of focus back, it got to a space where this is where I got really kind of confused. I got to a place where I couldn't really find the breath or anything. So I'm kind of in a space like a dark, spacious thing, and nothing was like really happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the first 2 days, what happened was when I got to that place, I got really scared for really no reason. Like,
mm-hmm.
just got the feeling of like really scared, to a point I actually had to open my eyes and just make sure that, you know, I'm safe. So the meditation was just broken
right.
for like a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
And then very recently, like yesterday or day before, I was kind of able to keep the meditation going, even in that dark, spacious space.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was I wasn't thinking, like, it wasn't like I was like, my I wasn't like getting distracted or thinking other things, but I remember like two times things were happening, like it's not like I'm thinking, but like a movie, like a quick movie, things were just happening, like it happened twice. So my question is again, am I like, especially since I got really scared at this space, and then experiencing these things, I wanted to know if I have done something wrong. If there's something wrong, how should I fix that, and what should I be doing at this point?
Yeah. So this is what actually we already to some extent discuss, that you get absorbed to something. So particularly when you practice anapanasati, a nimitta can happen, a sign, kind of a sign can happen, and it can manifest in many different ways. So now for you, it has happened like a dark cloud or something like that, and automatically you get absorbed to that, you start immerse into that, plunge into that. And now very much like the darkness is everywhere, you are inside the darkness, like. So you don't need to get afraid, by the way. So you can simply enjoy it. You can simply understand, okay, this is what is happening. So there's a kind of a dark cloud like thing, and you slowly start looking at it, be gentle with it, happy with it, contented with it. And now you get immersed into it. You become one with it. So you are there. You can't now think, you can't say your mind can't waver, your mind can't shift. Mind is completely absorbed to it, adhere to it. So this is what typically called the samatha jhana, the samatha absorption. So you become one with it. You can simply enjoy it, basically. So this samatha practice time to time can happen, particularly when you practice anapanasati. That possibility is there. You don't need to be afraid, but anyway... what we typically suggest is rather than promoting continuous being in the jhana, so before you enter the jhana, anyway, you better look at certain subtle aspects of breathing. Say, for example, from which nostril the in-breath is going in, from which nostril the out-breath is happening or going out, and what are the differences between in-breath and the out-breath, whether it is warm or cool. And whether are you experiencing the beginning, the middle, the end. So likewise, these subtle investigation actually promotes yonisomanasikara, promotes wisdom. So you are not merely practicing concentration. Now you are adding wisdom part into the picture. So therefore, you are promoting both sides. Samatha and vipassana, you are taking them in parallel like. So therefore, I suggest you to include that part also, because then the wisdom side is also growing in parallel.
Okay, understood. So
yeah.
Basically your suggestion is, So when, you know, when I'm in Paryanka, if I feel the tremors and other things in the body, I can focus on them.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they're not there, maybe I can maybe focus on the changes in the breath instead of just sitting in that dark place. That
Yes.
Okay.
Correct, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Understood, Swamin. I said, Thiran Sanai.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Randini. So next question, Ashan, can go. You can unmute your.
Yes.
You have said in the Dham talk about Pachyavetsitva, Pachyavetsitva, Kana and Kamma Sakasabha.
Yeah.
I want to tell you that actually I am able to, I have certain ability to realize, understand when some action is going to happen, I am able to get a pre-idea about that. But in the mind, if something is going to be thought, but I am unable to identify that it is going to be thought, or I always find it at the middle of the thought. So I am unable to do the contemplation on that. Could you please help me?
Yeah. So it will happen slowly, because that is the difficult part. Because mind typically quickly thinks. It's so fast. And it is very much like addicted to thinking. So the thinking is its typical behavior. So the bodily action, on the other hand, we first think and then we act. Similarly, I mean, the talking also very much like that. We first think and then we talk. So the bodily action and verbal action, probably it is easy to reflect and then implement it. But as you correctly mentioned, the thinking is quite difficult and different, where the thinking immediately happens. There is no big space for us to look at it and then apply brakes or stop thinking. Rather, the thinking happens very naturally, very immediately like. So it's difficult for us to reflect the mind first and then start thinking. As you said, it automatically starts thinking. But anyway, as we continue the practice, so the thinking become less and less. The proliferation become less and less, and now say assume that the number of thoughts happening per minute, for example, also become less and less. Suppose now you have 100 thoughts per minute. As you continue your practice, it might drop to 75, it might drop to 50, it might drop to 25. So likewise, the rate of thoughts per minute, that also start reducing. So likewise, the practice, even the bodily practice, I mean the Kanupasana, helps you to calm down thinking, relax the thinking, and make it ease and not so strong. Rather, it becomes kind of weak background type of thinking. So it may happen gradually. So don't worry that that immediately you can't track it or trace it. Don't worry about it.
And the other question I have for you, Swaminathan, I ask you not to get angry over this, but is it all right to love Lord Buddha, Triple Gem, Noble Friends, Dharma Friends? Is it a sin or is it a normal sin?
Actually, based on the Buddha, it is called the faith, not typically the love. So because faith is something different, I feel that the love can have certain sensual attraction, sexual attraction. So that is where the kind of underneath tendencies are very much like influencing it. But the faith, on the other hand, where you are trusting and you have some gratitude, you trust that the Buddha is the teacher, he'll guide me, and his teaching is very correct and he is fully enlightened. So it's a different kind of a faith actually we are talking here. And it is not that we love the Buddha, we maintain a respectful faith towards the Buddha.
I understand. and Swaminathan.
Yeah.
The final question I have for you, Swaminathan, is that you must be knowing Rerukhani Sandhima Thero's book is named Satipatthana Bhavanasrama.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in that, there are some meditation practice including involving repetitive thinking of one thing, like eating,
sleeping,
like that. When we do a certain action, we think about two times about that to understand what it is. And actually, when I applied it for myself, when I was proliferation thing, I thought proliferating and proliferating two times and it disappears,
mm-hmm,
and comes to the sensation I am having at that moment.
Okay.
So I think it was very effective for me.
Right.
Do you suggest me to do that?
Yeah.
Meditation for a certain period of time till I get back to normal procedure?
Yes, definitely. So this is actually the Mahasi method, the traditional Mahasi method greatly has this technique where you continuously note, you start labeling, noting continuously so that you not get distracted but you are fully attentive to the current task. But later you may understand, okay, it's now not necessary, it's a kind of a burden to the mind. I now have the mind without distraction. So now at that time you can drop it. You don't need to label or note, you can maintain a silent mind. Till that, probably you can make use of it.
Thank you very much, Swami Hansa. Merit for you. Teram Sanai, Swami Hansa.
Yeah, Teram Sanai.
All right, thank you. So next question, Mahesh, can go? You can unmute and ask your question.
Thank you, Alkai
Mante. Yeah.
I'll tell a bit about my usual practice, day-to-day practice. Since I got the advice from you that not necessarily that I have to sit and do Pariyanka Bhavana, so I haven't done it for a long time now, since my last retreat, I think. But when I'm walking in my day-to-day activities, I watch my mind where it goes, so not necessarily I'm putting it to my feet or the movements, but watch what's happening. Same thing I do in my day-to-day activities. Not that I can focus the whole 24/7 on my mind, but whenever I do my mind, okay, I have to check what's happening with my mind, then I do it, get back and do it. So keeps on like that, and I check always whether how my mind, is it tangled with something, or is it happy, or is it sad, or is it trying to find faults with others, or whether trying to criticize the things that I hear, things like that. Anyway, I'm watching my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So throughout the period, I see most of the time like it's quite cool and it's not like happy or sad, it's staying neutral. And I see sometimes it's actually extremely happy and it's joyful. There's no reason to find like why it's joyful, but it's very feeling like it's very some kind of a joy.
Yes.
And at times like I feel like it's, oh, it's very down and it's very, there's no reason, but it's like very like hiding, or like it's like, I can't say it's frustrated, but it's something closer to that. Like it's just stay, like it's staying because it's staying.
Mm-hmm.
And at times when I hear like, you know, kind of in the past few weeks, you know, we had a lot of political jargon, especially happening in Sri Lanka. So I hear people talking in my household, or, you know, I don't normally get into those conversations because that's not my topic. But I hear now, here and there, I hear it, and then my mind says, oh, I'm going to actually tangle in that and, you know, try to figure out, assess, oh, this is right or this is wrong. And then again, come back to the mind and say, why you are trying to, you know, chase behind those things and it's none of your business and trying to revert back to the, you know, my practice. So it's keep on going like that. And sometimes I tangle actually when someone, when I hear someone discussing about it, I just try to put my mouth words forward and say, oh, you know, don't expect, huge revolution out of this. It's not possible. Things will move on slowly, so we don't have to have expectations like that.
Yeah.
Neutral kind of explanation, but I'm trying to say, and then people get angry over me when I say like that, oh, we're a very pessimistic person, something like that. And then, okay, why should I say like that? Then I regret why you try to explain people these things, like, you know, it's not your duty. So regretting comes. And then again, mind says, okay, you don't have to regret. You know, the Swami always say, you don't have to regret. And then reminds me not to regret. And then again, it's back to that, not neutral, but kind of like not shaken state.
Yeah.
So it keeps on going like that. And I actually stopped working, which is great. And I tried it for like for a year actually now. And then I look back, oh, am I happy the past 12 months that I spent, have I spent my time, lifetime in a worthy cause? And I did a bit of traveling while I'm practicing my self, looking at the mind. And I quite enjoy visiting places. And also then I revert back, especially when I'm having free time during the night or when I'm having a couple of minutes to reflect on what I'm really doing. So I did a lot of walking, hiking, seeing places, and most of the things I forget.
Mm-hmm.
So quickly I forget the names I visited, forget the things I saw, and I don't have any regret. I look at it and, can you remember these things you saw? And no, I can't remember. Then I get back to the photos and have, try to recall them. And still it's not staying with my mind.
Good.
And when someone asks, oh, where you went and have you enjoyed? I say, yes, I enjoyed, but I can't recall the places I visited.
Good. Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, okay, that's fine. You know, don't have to hardly remember. It's not a classroom lesson that you have to recall all the places you visited.
Mm.
So that's how I'm going on. And then suddenly I have sometimes certain cravings. So now the craving has gone for, like, you know, trying to find exactly some place that I really enjoy. So even if someone asks, okay, shall we do this, shall we do that, then I deliberately say no.
Mm.
Then they ask why, then I say, no, I don't like doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like doing it, so I don't do it. But recently I got a, like 2 months ago actually, I got an email from Mr. Anonia saying about a retreat for experienced yogis, something I felt like, oh, that's interesting. And then I was thinking, okay, if it's possible, I will go. And then I got the email saying, okay, the dates are fixed and it's coming up in November.
Mm-hmm.
Then I say that I thought, okay, I will apply to it. So I didn't apply though. Mm-hmm. At that time.
Mm-hmm.
But then later on, again, I got to my mind, okay, am I interested? Check the dates, and then I thought, okay, I will just put an application. I don't know whether I will get it because it must be very competitive.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I applied. So, anyway, again, I assess myself and say, I really want to go to that. Now, you went to one this year and you had a craziness of looking at the place because I haven't been to Nisargadamini before, so I had a look and, you know, I know what's the place. I can imagine when the Dharma talks are going, okay, this must be in this place. I have a place in a school, you may imagine. Okay, now Swaminathas must be sitting there and the other Swaminathas are like that and people are here and it's listening and I'm just imagining that.
So those are the things now we need to improve actually. One second. Actually, those imaginations are the ones you need to abandon now. Because you foresee things. Your mind still prepare things, create things, imagine things. Now, this is a burden to the mind. You need to recognize it and slowly restrain the mind not to do it. Because now you know that
exactly.
So this is the kind of a addiction that we typically have. So before the event happens, we imagine about it, we think about it, proliferate about it. And as you properly, correctly mentioned, so those imaginations, those imagined sights are happening inside the mind, so fully occupying the mind. But that basically disturbed the clarity of the mind, that you had a very spacious clarity, evenness of the mind, that being disturbed because of this imagined mental objects. So that you need to slowly recognize and see the harm of it and slowly abandon it.
Yes, that's the very reason that I'm not coming to the question. So that imagination thing happens. Now the mind says, okay, that's okay to imagine because it's something what you like, what it's related to Dhamma. So it's reasoning out things, you know. The imagination starts and then it's giving space, saying that, it's okay because it's about Dhamma, not the retreat that we're living. So it's finding a reason to expand on that and, you know, give the, you know, capacity for it to grow.
Ultimately you proliferate.
Yes, it's very hard
ultimately
for
you fantasize.
For me to look at it, it's just go. It's just go and keep thinking and keep thinking.
Correct.
And even though if I look at it, it's again giving a signal to the mind, that's all right, keep on thinking, because it's something about
Actually, it's not about Dhamma, it's about craving. I feel like you're praying for it, right? Correct. You have to figure out, imagine that, and it's again like a film is unfolding for you. Exactly. Yeah, and then you enjoy it. Yeah, so that's where I, and then I was thinking about this yesterday because I was thinking that I must ask from you.
So then my mind yesterday telling, okay, now think about this in a neutral way. Even if you go to Sri Lanka and you go to Nisargamane and do the retreat for this experience yogis, still you can do it at home because it will be given in the Zoom anyway. So why not, you know, you design yourself the whole 10 days, do what you do in Nisargamane at home. I have the capacity to do it at home. And no one disturbed me, and I create my lifestyle like that, that I can do the meditation, I can do the sitting, and I know the timetable, I know when to wake up, I know when to sit for the Dhamma talk, I know when to sit for the Q&A, and all those, the whole routine I can do at home. So then comes and say, why you want to go there when you can do it at home? So that's the question actually I'm actually having. And then Mana must be thought like that, my mind was so relaxed. Earlier I had kind of a burden. Okay, I'm going for this, I must do this, like that. I had a strong craving. And when I again thought, okay, you can do it at home as well in the same capacity, ultimately the result will be similar. You go do it there or you do it at home, there won't be much difference. Only thing is your effort.
No, anyway, I mean, a certain amount of thinking at this level is fine, but you need to see that still the mind is having some inner chatter, some kind of a conflict between two ideas, and so promote calmness in the mind, tranquility in the mind. So your mind still has the tendency to imagine, tendency to proliferate. You need to recognize it, and that's why you are talking about it. You have, to some extent, you have recognized it, so don't promote it. So the mind free from proliferation is something that we can promote. That is the sort of side, the direction that we have to take.
And then when we, now seeing it, understand it, again try to figure out like, okay, what's best to do to achieve what I want to achieve. And, you know, I heard in one of the Dhamma talks that we need to have kind of a motivation and a craving to go in the path. Otherwise, we will just stay in one place. It's not happening. So we have to try and, you know, work on this. So kind of motivation is also needed.
No, so that is the beginning.
It's about balancing.
No, that's the beginning of the practice. So you are doing. So your practice, you are doing, you are striving, you are putting a lot of effort. So that is the first part of the practice. But once you reach the unattached state of mind, the practice has to change or shift to the other side. You have to just be, just enjoy it, just relax, just calm down. So your practice has to shift from one side to the other side. Previously you are driving yourself, doing you are doing practice, but now you need to shift to the other side. Okay, let it happen. I am ready to accept. Let things happen. Calm down, quiet, and so that kind of just be, just enjoy.
Yeah, so what I understood from
ek vaar ki right mukara ek lage kai sama gen tus kara ek mama ara me shana ara bar tika
I think it's not from my side, someone else's mic has been on, I think.
Yes,
sorry about it.
Yeah.
So what I understood from what you said just now, like if I'm getting like all those kind of like pre-planned things and getting disturbed just because the email came and this is happening, and just then my mind trying to creep through it into it, I just have to watch it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Doing anything else.
And let it go,
I just
then.
Just have to watch that, how it's trying to dance or whatever the information that I'm getting from outside, another piece of information.
So that's the thing. So,
right,
I mean, certain thoughts are completely useless. So many suggestions are useless, imaginations are useless. Maybe only 1%, 2% may be worth.
Yeah. So, yeah, I got the point.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Yeah, okay. Okay, then we have spent almost 1.5 hours today. So I cordially invite Venerable Dhammosada to conduct the sharing of merits.
May our relatives and all beings share in the merits produced by today's teaching. May all celestial beings rejoice in the merits produced by today's teaching, and may they protect the Dhamma disposition and the dispensation of the Buddha for a long time. May the seeds that have been planted in our hearts today grow, producing path, fruition, and nibbana. I invite you to join in the recitation of the traditional Pali verses for sharing merits. Ettavata chamhehi sambhatam punya sampadam sambhe deva anumodantu samma sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata chamhehi sambhatam punya sampadam sambhene
bhuta
anmodantu samma sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata chamhehi sammadam punya sampadam sambhe satta anmodantu samma sampatti siddhiya. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyandam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyandam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mam param. Idam vo jñātīnaṃ hotu sukhitā hontu ñātayo. Idam vo jñātīnaṃ hotu sukhitā hontu ñātayo. Idam vo jñātīnaṃ hotu sukhitā hontu ñātayo. Himinā puñyakammena māme bāla samāgamo. Satam samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Himinā puñyakammena māme bāla samāgamo. Satam samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Himinā puñyakammena māme bāla samāgamo. Satam samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.